Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, filling in for Steve Jones, here's Kevin Herr.
Welcome to another edition of the Best of the Steve Jones Show. As the man said, Kevin Herr filling in for the vacationing Steve Jones this week in the Sunbury Motors Studio East. Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Loads of Hyundai deals going on right now. And you can find out more about the Hyundai deals by visiting sunburymotors.com, seeing them in person in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza. Find out how you can lease a brand new 2015 Hyundai for well under $200 a month. Coming up today in the Best of the Steve Jones Show, we'll have a conversation with Steve Samsel, who's talking about sports on TV and some of the contracts. We'll have Dave Paulson's exit interview as he was leaving Bucknell's basketball program to head down to the D.C. area. We'll have new coach Nathan Davis's first interview. And we'll also have Jim Delaney talking Big Ten sports and television. But first, speaking of television, former Philadelphia Phillies broadcaster Chris Wheeler.
Wheels, welcome. It is great to hear your voice again. I think a lot of people feel the same way as I say that.
Hey, Steve, great. Thanks a lot. It's good to hear from you. And yeah, you and I have become really good pals over the last few years, and I really enjoy any time I get to spend with you, especially talk about Penn State.
Absolutely, and there was actually one special moment. I know that you'd want to touch on this. Mm-hmm. You were able to get to a Penn State spring practice, which was a great experience for you, and I'll get your feel for the team a little bit later about that. But you also had a chance to spend some time with Fran Fischer, which ironically was also the last time I had spent any time with him, and I know it meant a lot to you.
It sure did, Steve. As you know, I was fortunate enough to get that award of an alum award from the College of Communications a few years ago. And you and Fran were both at that dinner that night, which was a great honor for me. And I had seen Fran a few times over the years before that, and that night had some time to talk with him. And then that day, you and I were standing on the sidelines watching the scrimmage. I remember I looked over at you and I said, "Boy, there's Fran Fischer over there." And he was in the wheelchair with the oxygen and all, and he just didn't look good. But I remember you said to me, "Yeah, why don't you go over and say hi to him? I think he'd like that." And I did. And I went over and we talked for about a minute or so. And he was a typical Fran, just gracious. And as soon as I told him who I was, he knew me right away the way he always did. And how are you? And great to have you come back up. He's just typical Fran. So I go way, way back to him when he, in the late 60s, was doing the games up at Penn State. And he and Tom Bender were together and those kind of things. So it felt so good that I was able to, just, as you say, the last time a lot of us saw him and be able to spend a few minutes with him. It was an honor to know that man.
Chris, you also had a chance. You were able to get to Penn State spring practice, and we were there that day and had a long talk. And I know you had a lot of great access through Josh Gattis and so forth. What did you pick up? You've been around teams so often, and it doesn't matter what sport it is. You can pick up right away as to what people are thinking. What did you think as you watched them go about their business and then watch the kids themselves?
It was one of the coolest things I've ever been through because I've never done that before. And as you say, I've been around sports, it seems like my whole life, and live sports like that. And I guess there were so many things. The music, how loud it was, and you said it was better than when Bill O'Brien was there because it was on the whole time. At least they turned it down once in a while. The noise level was unbelievable. But I think that one drill where you walk me out onto the field and I watch them really smack into each other, and the speed and the noise of the game on the sidelines. But the way those practices ran, it seemed like every minute, they had a purpose in what they were doing. And Josh told me that. Josh and I have gotten to be friends over the last couple of years, and he's just a wonderful guy. And he told me about that. He said, "You watch these practices." He says, they're scripted pretty much. And he says, "We're doing something all the time, and kids don't stand around a whole lot and don't do anything." So I think the speed of it and the purpose of it, and, of course, for me to be around Penn State football at that level and to be down there and watch it that close. And the other thing I got to add, and I know you don't want to hear all this stuff, but I got to add, it was pretty cool standing there with you while you were setting the line for me because I had no idea who was out there.
Okay. You know what's interesting is that this week, you know, with the NBA Finals going on, there's been a focus, as typical, it wouldn't matter who was coaching, on the respective coaches. We don't know as much about David Blatt, but Steve Kerr is somebody who's been in the spotlight for decades, whether a player at Arizona, in the NBA, general manager, you know, now as head coach, broadcaster. And he was talking about the people he worked with in his time, Chris. And he played for Phil Jackson, and he played for and worked with Greg Popovich. And he said that to him, 90% of coaching, this is Steve Kerr now, 90% of coaching is creating an environment through force of personality. 10% involves strategy. And I think it might be 75-25. You've been around this a long time. Is that what you've seen in a baseball culture, which goes across the board, that a lot of it is actually trying to set a tone and environment as opposed to strategic?
I don't think it was that way necessarily when I started, because I think the manager and the general manager and those kind of people really, they had some say in things that were going on, but the players more or less policed it themselves in those days. Now we're in an era where the players, they don't want to upset each other. They don't want to get on each other. And the poor manager on a baseball team is really put in a situation where if he has a couple of bad apples in that clubhouse, and they start poisoning the whole environment, it can go south pretty quickly. You have to have the talent in there, obviously, to win. But in my mind, you really need chemistry in a baseball clubhouse, because no sport do people spend that much time together as baseball players. And you figure they start in February, end in September, and hopefully in October, you know, if you get into postseason play. So, yeah, it's really, really important. And I've seen it happen when that clubhouse we had when Charlie was here, they took care of things in there. He didn't have to do a whole lot. They kind of liked each other. Or they would get on each other a little bit, but for the most part, they were talented and the chemistry was tremendous. It turned out after that, if for a few years, it wasn't so hot. It's not so great right now, even though it's a little bit better because we're getting more younger guys, newer guys in there. But I really believe that you have to have that kind of thing to win. And I know a lot of fans poo-poo that. They say, oh, you know, it's all whether he can put the hit and run on or whether he brings the right reliever in. Oh, that's all stuff people see. What they don't see is all the behind stuff that makes all that stuff work.
Yeah, exactly. And I see that all the time in the teams that I'm around. Because like you and I have been able to get access over the years. Well, with access comes a different level of what really goes on versus what is perceived during the game, and creating that environment. You saw that in football with Josh Gattis when you're around him and around practice. It's not just the strategy of getting something done. You're trying to create an environment as well for them to thrive.
Oh, absolutely. And you want to put them in positions to succeed.
Yes.
You know, you're talking about, you know, you're at the amateur level there, even though big-time college football, it's amateur, but, boy, it's intense, as I saw up close and personal, the way that I was lucky enough to see it. But in professional sports, and you know from working with Joe all those years and the coaches that you've been around since with Bill O'Brien and I'm sure James Franklin, they will, when they trust you, they will tell you things. And you
yes.
have that in your mind as you watch the game unfurl, and you know exactly what I mean. And they will tell you about guys, look, I've got to put guys in situations sometimes that I know they're going to fail. I can't help it because that's what I have. But I do everything I can in my power not to put them in that position, even though I know I'm going to have to do it sometimes. So, you know, they'll tell you, this guy can't play a lick. But, you know, I kind of inherited them, or those kind of things. And you know all these things when you're on the air and you're around it and you're out in public.
Yeah.
And you have to bite your tongue, you know, when you're standing there with fans. Well, I really love, or I can't understand why he won't play this guy. And you want to say, sir, he can't play. He overexposed. And sure enough, when the guy plays, he gets overexposed because there's a reason why he doesn't play a lot. But those are the kind of things you're lucky enough to know and that I've been lucky enough to see and that you're lucky enough to see when you're around it. And there's nothing like the guys who run the team trusting you enough to tell you that stuff, because you can always go in the right direction when you're on the air. And you know exactly what I mean.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. That you can take it in the right direction because you already know. It is tough, though, when you do go before a group of people and they'll say, well, this guy, X. Oh, and you just stand there and you think to yourself, what is the polite way of doing this where you don't burst everybody's bubble here?
Right, and you're in a situation where you're out there where the kids have parents that might hear it.
Yes,
when they're a pro, hey, they're getting paid, and they got to have a little tougher skin. I mean, these kids are amateurs with families and parents and all that, but there's still certain guys that can do things, and there's certain guys that can't, and we have respect for all of them to get to that level because we could never do that in anything we try to do, but yet there are limitations.
A guy that when he was at Williamsport and I saw him play State College and I said to myself, wow, this guy has upward mobility. And whenever I think that about a player, I think, hey, they can get the double A and then we'll see what happens after that. That was Mike Gianfranco. What do you think of him so far on the major league level as he goes through the adjustments?
Well, I remember another kid you told me about was Quinn that you told me about a few years ago, and I'll talk about Franco in a second. But you told me about Quinn, how much you liked him, and now he's progressed to Reading. And I was sitting with Pat Gillick watching a game the other night. We were playing the Reds, and you know that Billy Hamilton, just ridiculous how he can just – the way he just – the speed he has is just incredible. Gillick looked at me at one point. He says, you know, Roman Quinn can run like him. I said, get out of here.
Yes.
He said, no, he can. He can run like this guy. And I remember that you had told me about him. So I'm really excited about him in our minor league system. As far as Mike Gianfranco, he's special. He's so raw and young and has so many things to learn. He's a worker. He wants to get better. He has a couple tools, though, you just don't teach. You can't teach a guy to have the ball come off the bat the way that it does. You can turn your back when he's hitting in BP and you know it's somebody different. It's just loud when he hits, and he throws really well. He has all the positives that should make him a tremendous player. And all that said and done, this sport that I'm involved in, I don't know if there's anything harder to do on the major league level, and it gets harder and harder now and nowadays with all the talent that comes in and the speed and the way they throw the baseball and do things. But this kid has got everything to be a big-time, everyday player and prevent runs on defense, Steve, and create runs with his offense.
Yeah. And as for Quinn, ninth, this will be the 10th season I've done the spikes games here. Quinn's the fastest player I've seen in the New York Penn League in the first 9 years.
Wow. There you go. And that's why Pat's talking about him. When you compare somebody to Billy Hamilton and you talk about that kind of speed, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, that is ridiculous. Hamels and Harang. Doesn't matter. They get the ball, they go out and get it done. As professionals, how have you felt about the way they've handled their respective starts?
Well, you know, as everybody knows, you know, the Phillies aren't a very good team. You know, like, no kidding. Right now, we officially have the worst record in Major League Baseball. I think we've given it up to Milwaukee now. So, yeah, that's pretty horrible when you look at it and think you only have 22 wins at this point. Those two guys, Hamels has been very good. He's pitched well all year. Every day there's the stuff swirls around him that you're going to get traded and all that. And he blocks it out pretty well. I think sometimes it affects him. It has to. But he's such a pro, and he's been around for so long. And plus, he's so good, and he's so talented that he can go out there and just do what people can't do. Harang's been very good up until the last couple starts. I don't know whether it's because the Reds know him so well because he was there for so long, but they had a real good feel on how to approach him. He walked a lot more batters than he had against other teams. He ran more deep counts, and he's not a hard thrower. So as a result, he really got hurt with home runs, and the Reds got him pretty good the last couple times out. Now, does that mean his history a little bit has been he has a fast start and then doesn't finish real strong? So I think he's going to be one of those guys, Steve, by the trade deadline on the 31st, so you'll probably see him move to another team because I think he'll be very attractive to a contender. What we hope is that he pitches well to that point and maybe he can get somebody back who's not just a body in return, who somebody could help you in the future.
Exactly. Chase Utley, you've seen him all the way through to this point. Why have we seen him hit this slump at this particular time? Is the bat slower? Is it just how he's being pitched? What is it?
because with the age now and the injuries that he's had, you don't know. And this sport is cruel. When they go the other way and it starts to go, sometimes they don't pull out of it. It looked like for a while there he had found a little bit. And I know it sounds crazy, but he'd gotten up to like 208 or 210, and that was really good considering where he had come from. And now he's regressed again. He's not hitting the ball very hard. He has a swing that takes a lot of timing. Everybody's seen it for years. You know, the way he gets himself set, he brings his hands back. It's all timing. And then he has such quick, explosive hands. His swing is so short that it's been amazing to watch over the years. Well, all of that is off right now. And is that a result of that half second that he doesn't have anymore? Is it a result of the fact that he's had problems with his legs over the years? Although he said he'll never tell you if anything's wrong with him. Is there anything wrong with him right now? I don't know that. Or is he just a player in decline that you worry about is never going to be able to come near what he's done before? But he, as I said, that's obviously not a very good team. But when your guy that you count on is hitting it in the three hole and is struggling the way he is, it really makes it hard to score runs.
Rob Manfred put a real emphasis on pace of play. Have you noticed it at all?
Yeah. I think one of the problems is the offense is down so much in baseball because these relief pitchers all come in throwing 100. If you don't get the starter nowadays and the games get late, nobody does anything. So I think that, yeah, I do. And, you know, obviously I see National League games, even though we've had a little bit of interleague. We'll have more coming up. We're going to play Baltimore. We're going to go up to Yankee Stadium. We're going to go up to the Red Sox in September. Those games sometimes will go a little bit longer just to the fact that there's no pitching changes in them. The guys stay out there and get hammered a little longer, and you have nine hitters, so those games are going to go a little bit longer. But, I think so. I think they try to do some things. You do notice them that some of them speeded up their habits, but whether they're finding them or doing anything, I don't know. It's so hard with the Players Association and that to discipline guys nowadays and tell them what they're going to do. You have to get them used to it, I think, and the league you're watching up there, you got to get them start to get used to it from that league on, because by the time they get to the big leagues, they've got all these habits, and it's tough for them to break. But yeah, the pace of play is a little bit better. But you know, I'm a fan. I don't care how long the games go. I know some people have the attention span of a field mouse, you know, and they have to have everything boom, 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 you know, so they can text and do stuff at the same. There I go. I sound like a fossil, but I know they got to be able to do all these things. Five things at once. And to me, I just love to just sit and watch a game. I love the pace of it a lot of time. You know, there's sometimes it's bad. I know that. But I just love to be able to look around, maybe look around during pitches, look out and watch the defenses being set, watch for some little subtle thing, want the constant action. Well, that's not going to be our game, and it's never going to be.
Two fossils talking at once. Hey, you know I enjoy every second. We could talk for the next 3 or 4 hours about a wide variety of things.
Sure.
Most important thing is get your backside back up here as quickly as possible so we can spend a little more time together.
Yeah, okay? I appreciate that. I always look forward to catching that was a treat for me that day when you were at that scrimmage that we were able to hang out that day. I really enjoyed that. Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, same here. Hey, Wheels, thanks a lot. Everybody loved hearing from you, most especially the host. Thanks so much.
Okay, bud. I can't wait to see you again and get back up to you know how I love Penn State, so I hope to see you real soon.
Same here. Chris Wheeler with us. Great to have him, as always. My good friend who is, the guys that do a fine job, but we miss him on Philly's broadcast. I will just say that straight out with all due respect to the fine people that are there now. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other options
auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
Sports talk, where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors studio, filling in for Steve Jones, here's Kevin Herr.
It is the best of the Steve Jones Show all this week, as Steve taking a little R&R, getting ready for the start of the Penn State football season. Boy, I'll tell you what, we have a busy month of August getting ready for Penn State football, plus the Little League World Series. And don't forget, there's still the NFL games coming up, too. As a matter of fact, there's one coming up this weekend that I might have to catch. But we're not talking about the NFL right now. We're talking about sports actually in general on TV and some of the sports contracts that have recently gotten signed and the one that is in the works with the Big Ten. We'll have Jim Delaney coming up in the next hour. We'll also have Dave Paulson and Nathan Davis, a former Bucknell coach and the current Bucknell basketball coach, after Steve Samsel talks about sports on TV. This is the best of the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
All the major TV contracts have been settled with one major exception, and that is the Big Ten. Jim Delaney positioned it in such a way where they would be the last to have their TV contract settled, with the idea that rights fees would explode in such a way where it could be the biggest windfall the Big Ten could possibly see. Will it work out that way? Steve Samsel joins us, media writer for syndicated for a variety of papers, also in the faculty of Penn State. Steve, welcome back. It is great to hear from you.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me. Great to be on. Appreciate it.
Steve, let's start. You wrote a very thoughtful column, I thought, on what the Big Ten should do since they're the next major contract. And if I get the basic premise wrong, just jump in right away. The basic premise was don't sacrifice viewership for dollars. Thus, ESPN is a key road. Your thought process behind – what was the thought process behind your thinking on that?
I think it's something that we've seen play out in a couple different ways in sports. I mean, ESPN is the sports network, despite the other ones starting up, whether it's NBC or CBS. And I think we've seen that with people going out on their own from ESPN. There have been a few success stories individually in terms of broadcasters, and I know we're talking about a conference in the league here with Penn State and the Big Ten. But there is so much that people that, you know, you talk about what names, what things that are identified as that. When people watch sports on TV, they almost think of ESPN intuitively because they've built that through all the years. And then I just think my thought process was people want to see the games, even though channels are kind of equal among the 800 you have on your dial that you can find to and you can search the stations. People still intuitively turn to ESPN for college sports and especially college football. And I think there's some perception to be lost there. There's some just that rub, that affiliation with that great market that ESPN and the marketing they do when you go to Fox Sports, or if you would go to Fox Sports instead, even though you're going to take more money, you're going to lose a little bit in perception and what people see and how often they see you. And I think that's big.
Now let's take it a month after you've written that, or how many weeks it's been. Since that point, Fox has had the Women's World Cup and scored successful ratings with a 15+. They've done well with the U.S. Open and the USGA. So fans were able to find that. Did that change your thinking at all or reinforce it?
Maybe it changed it a little bit, although I think those are different events. And although once people get into a habit, I mean, if you're that network that has the Big Ten, that's where Big Ten fans are going to come find you. So I can see that eventually working, and maybe the viewership doesn't drop off much. And you're amongst that big crowd at ESPN. So maybe there's some thought process there from the Big Ten side. Hey, if we get out of being lumped in with the SEC and all the other groups and whatever else. But I think there's an out of sight, out of mind thing, certainly with
right.
ESPN that's proven with the NHL and other sports that if they don't have them or they're not theirs, you may not get that attention. And I think there's some certainly big value in being aware and being getting time on SportsCenter or showing up for a behind-the-scenes show that they might do about a team or a sport. So I think people can find the stations. I think they're going to search and look for them and where they're at in their cable dial. And that was proven with the U.S. Open and especially with the women's soccer. But there's just still that it being ESPN. So it'll be interesting to see what they decide to do.
I felt, and I'd like interested to see how you felt. I felt the Pac-12 did not get its just due on game day or on ESPN until they finally got a solid package on ESPN.
Yeah, and I think that's part of it. I think it's easier to ignore the games you have or don't have, and I haven't looked at it specifically in a while. Although I think this was true on game day last year. You know, they wouldn't show what network other games were on if it wasn't one of theirs, and Fox Sports did that with its game mm-hmm. pregame college show that nobody really watched, but ESPN didn't do if it wasn't one of theirs. So you're watching game day. Maybe there's less of a chance they're going to bring game day to your venue. Maybe there's less of a chance they're going to talk of you, but maybe there's no chance at all. They're going to tell you, hey, I'm watching this ahead of time. What channel are they on in case I'm not paying attention? And it's just those kind of things that make you a little less relevant in the whole scheme of things.
Something, though, that is hidden in the – we know that ESPN, its ratings are or its viewership in primetime is number one among all cable networks easily. Right now, courtesy of the Stanley Cup, NBC Sportsnet is two, but there's really always been a major drop-off between ESPN and ESPN2 in primetime ratings. Only five Big Ten games in the regular season were actually on ESPN last year. Everything else was ESPN2 or ESPNU, and of course, BTN. What importance should Jim Delaney assign to, all right, if I go with you, we need spots on the number one network?
Oh, I think that's important, and I think that's something, again, you know better than I what they can negotiate and where they can fit with those things. But yes, you want to be on the big one, because there is a difference for folks that follow this a little bit with Outside the Lines. There's the outside critics will complain about where ESPN's journalism show Outside the Lines, whether it shows up on ESPN or ESPN2, and the number of people that don't watch. Mm-hmm. There's clearly a difference, and again, it is that it would certainly probably be something to say, okay, well, if we're not going to be on the main one, why not have our own? Why not go someplace else where somebody's going to pay us more money and put us on Fox Sports, and we are going to be the thing they invest in? So I think that's certainly what they have to weigh, because, you know, if we're only going to have half a dozen games on ESPN and you're battling with the SEC for games and you don't know who's going to choose what or what other networks or programs they put on there, that's a challenge. And so you want to be seen, and I certainly, with social media and all the teams in the conference and everybody out there, you can leverage and drive people to something, to another channel or to another network or affiliation. So I don't think it's awful if it happens, if they switch. I just think there's still a downside.
Is it possible, Steve, in today's media that you can farm out some of it to Fox and keep a portion of it on ESPN? Is it possible in today's media to do that, or does it have to be all in one way or the other?
I think there's probably something creative they could do if they want to do it. I think something that makes sense for everybody, you know, I think they could find a way to do it. It depends on what else comes to the table. What other rights are there? What kind of online streaming things are there? What other kinds of sports can you do in terms of stuff you're going to make? And they have that relationship with the Big Ten Network already, in piece being in large part owned by Fox. So there's all kinds of options, you know, and the other games are on the ESPN right now. So I think there's creative ways to do it. I think you're probably going to see more and more of that creativity happening as these deals get done going forward.
The NFL, the game in London involving, I think it's Buffalo and Jacksonville, is going to be a game that, you know, of course, last year they did the quadruple header where the game was on Fox at 9:30 in the morning in the East. But this game is going to be streamed on Yahoo and only shown in the local markets. How interested are you in the success of that experiment?
I'm not as interested as the league is in the success of that argument or that approach. But, yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how it works, see how many people go there. From what I understand and could read, you know, Yahoo paid, you know, what amounts to, if you break out a contract to hold – deal of a contract for the NFL, you know, what a game was worth. So they're going to have to find a way to make that multi-million dollar investment work for them and attract people there to view it and sponsors to get people to view it. So I think that'll be the interesting thing. If they get in any way close to, and they probably will with the NFL, making it make money for them and making it successful for them, all of a sudden, you know, that opens the doors for I would think, for a bunch of other options going forward.
Steve Samsel joining us. Steve, let's back to the Big Ten for one quick moment, and a question I forgot to ask. The opener of the season on September 3rd, a Thursday night, happens to be Michigan with its return game against Utah. It's Michigan. It's Jim Harbaugh's initial game as the head coach, and it's also on Fox Sports 1, which you and I both know Jim Delaney will watch closely. Can that be a barometer game as to whether it can work on another network or not?
I don't think it's going to hurt. I mean, I think if from the Fox Sports 1 side, you want to draw a good number, you want to show them you're treating that game as the big season opening game it is for them, you want to show them it's, you know, the production values are there, and I don't think there's really much doubt about that anymore. There's not many places that don't do this stuff well. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think it can certainly be okay. You know, we've been talking about how we're going to make this work. We've been looking at options. Here's this game. This is how they're going to treat us. This is what they're going to do. This is what the package looks like, and it's going to be even better if we commit. Yeah, I think everything that happens in the process plays a role, but I would think that's certainly a milepost that matters.
ESPN has 12-year deals with the SEC, the ACC. I think now the Pac-12, Big 12, college football playoff, which then, of course, includes the college basketball components in those conferences as well, plus the mega deal that they have in conjunction with TNT and the NBA. There have been several stories lately about possible cutbacks there. Fox has already cut back on its sports news updates, and they've cut out that division. What are you seeing in the landscape right now, Steve, where it would affect what we see?
I think what I see coming down eventually in terms of what people will notice on TV is I think there's a real concern that we get studio sports, that because the TV contracts become so large and that the investment is there, we're going to invest in production, we're going to do this, and then you got teams that are struggling. Not all of them, but there'll be programs that struggle with attendance, and why am I going to go there? Because the viewer experience is so good on TV. Yeah. And what are they going to do different in the stadium for me? I think that's the biggest battle and the biggest thing that viewers will see, general sports fans, and how sports differ in the coming years is, wow, there's fewer people in the stands, or wow, when you watch that camera shot, well, wow, they're not showing me that camera shot that shows that, mm-hmm. that part of the stadium. Those kind of things, I think if you're savvy, you'll see sooner rather than later in certain sports. And I think that for me is, I know the deals are happening and what's going to exist and the content's going to be there, but I think how the content looks may differ a little bit going forward.
The Big Ten Network already does this with certain events where the announcers stay in Chicago and they announce games there. ESPN has very quietly done that with a few of their events, that people just don't realize that. What is it, something that we can tell? I mean, I can tell on BTN when it happens, but I mean, is it?
I think the people that do it, I think folks that are in your seat and have done what you do can tell almost immediately. I think if people are really listening and really paying attention and aren't worried about their team in whatever's going on, they can probably get a sense because it just, you know, there's not as much there's no reaction to the crowd or getting that sense of what's going on that you would have if you were in a broadcast booth at an event. And I think that's another cost-cutting move that they're probably going to, you know, not in regularity, but it's not uncommon now, so it wouldn't surprise me that you're going to find your way to sneak it in here and there. I mean, and Fox felt that way, even with the international feed for the women's soccer. You know, there's moments where they clearly didn't know in the booth what was going to happen because they didn't control what shot was coming next or what was going on, what people were going to see on the screen. So they were reacting sometimes slower than viewers. I mean, because we could see maybe a glimpse of who was walking. Think about it in the post match award ceremony, you know, we see people walking to pick up an award, and they're like, oh, we're not sure what this is going to be. And you're like, well, it looks like she's getting this. So, yeah, right. I think that's something that's going to happen a little more often. And I think, like I said, people like you notice it because it's your stock and trade, and you know what they're not doing. And then viewers who are savvy enough to listen or watch differently know it's happening as well. And it's a shame because that's what you're kind of paying the cable bill for to be able to get that experience. And if they're just watching the same thing you are but getting to talk about it, well, heck, you could do that too. You know, the average fan could feel like they could do that too.
I know you made an interesting point about Fox Sports, Fox Sports One, when it comes to production value. Everyone really has it down as to how to do most things now. Sometimes people are later to the party than others. For example, we on the Penn State Sports Network, we didn't add a sideline reporter until a few years ago. You know, I mean, Joe didn't want a sideline reporter. That was the reason why. It wasn't like the idea wasn't brought up. But it's worked out great for us now that we're doing it. Is there any innovation that you've seen in the last few years that moving forward is really good in televised sports that now should be a regular thought for everybody?
Let me go a sort of a different way. There's something I think should be there, and I talked to a couple people this week from national networks who say it's never going to be there on a regular basis, and I don't know that I understand why with how we're changing. It's social media stuff, like a standing handle on a screen or a hashtag to tweet about a game, you know, hashtag PSU versus OSU. Now, they might be there at certain points during a game, but women's soccer and the U.S. Open both didn't have them for Fox Sports. You don't see them regularly other places. I think the Pirates on Root Sports do a decent job.
Yes.
When they want to with the Bucks booth thing, talking back to the announcers. But as much as people are using their phones at home or wherever else, watching these events and wanting to be part of this community, it was interesting. The folks from Fox Sports and the folks from ESPN both said, yeah, there's a community out there. There's a conversation. We want to help be a part of that. But they don't want to drive people to a specific room. It's like, yeah, there's this game going on, but we're not going to put that stuff on the screen to tell you which room to go to have that conversation at. So that's not an innovation, but to me it's a missed opportunity, that chance to combine the social media. And I would think the stakeholders would want that. I would think the leagues would want to be able to say, hey, if they're going to talk about us and we're going to do this on social media, let's go to them, you know, to hashtag BTN championships or something, so that it's all in the same place and they can get that value of the numbers of interactions and those kinds of things. So I think I'm sure there's some technical things that I'd rather have. I'm not a big fan of every person in the world being accessible for an interview during a game. You know, I think that's kind of gone overboard. It was neat. You know, hockey's been doing it between periods for years. I'm not a big fan of that, and it seems like that's happening more and more where we're wiring coaches and things like that during the game, and that's just scary to me. But I think there's a missed opportunity in social media that I'm not sure anybody's going to really embrace.
Yeah, in fact, I was doing a game on BTN with Jim Jackson. And during commercial breaks, when they would be talking with me about what we needed to do next, Jim was on Twitter.
Right.
All right, and that's what he was doing during the commercial breaks, that he was on Twitter and interacting. One final part to that. There's a lot. We all have the score boxes and so forth. Was one of the reasons that they gave you when you talked to them about social media interaction was because of clutter on the screen?
I asked specifically about clutter. I'm like, you know, is there not enough real estate there?
Okay.
And especially as screens are getting bigger in homes and stuff, I thought that might be it.
Right.
But no, they just said they wanted to, you know, they want to contribute to the conversation. And part of it, I think, was a misunderstanding, because I'm not expecting the guys doing the game to be the ones who are there for all of it. But just tell me, hey, if I want to say, hey, that was a pretty cool graphic, hey, they missed that point, or hey, I want to chime into some other fans, where's the best place to go do it? You know,
right.
which place is it? Which hashtag do you want me to use? And then we're all in the same place having the same conversation.
Wow, that's really interesting. That's an answer I never expected. Hey, Steve, thanks so much. I appreciate the time very much. I hope everything continues to go well for you.
Thanks, Steve. You as well. Have a great day.
Thanks.
Steve Samsel talking with Steve Jones as we talk a little sports on TV. We'll talk more about the Big Ten contract with television with Jim Delaney coming up in about 45 minutes from now. That'll be the second half hour of hour number two of the Steve Jones Show here for this Wednesday. Dave Paulson will have his exit interview with Steve as he left the Bison to head to the D.C. area. And then we'll have the first interview with the new Bucknell men's basketball coach, Nathan Davis. That's all coming up in the next hour of the Steve Jones Show. This is the Best of the Steve Jones Show. Kevin Herr in the Sunbury Motors Studio East. You'll find Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and you'll also find them on Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. That's where you'll find the Kia dealership. Hyundai, Lincoln, and Ford in downtown Sunbury. Well, not quite downtown, the North 4th Street Auto Plaza. And then Kia on Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. More of the Steve Jones Show coming up after the news.